welcome to Shameless, the celebrity and pop culture podcast that is your weekly guilty pleasure. You're joined, as always, by Melbourne journalists Zara McDonald and Michelle Andrews. My name is just Bess.
Yeah. You sound a bit husky this morning.
I think I just haven't coughed and I'm not going to cough into the microphone, so it's just going to be like this forever. Coming up on today's episode, the messy fall of Asia Argento, the crazy racism row erupting between YouTube's biggest beauty influencers, and the Australian male celebrities who are beginning to understand what it feels like to be a woman in the public eye. But first, Michelle, as always, how was your week?
It was a good week.
I was so high-pitched then.
It was a really good week. I feel like the weather was really good.
At what point was the weather good? Yesterday?
Yeah, that's all I can really remember. I'm quite a short-term memory kind of gal. I played with my friend's dog. My friend Maddie recently got a puppy, Dalmatian.
How much is she paying you for this?
A lot.
Yeah.
No,
she
got this puppy and it's 14 weeks old and it's already bigger than I am, basically. It's like the biggest Dalmatian you'll ever see in your life. So I spent all of last night playing with Ziggy. And
that's such a dog name.
You should see, my boyfriend Mitch is so obsessed with this dog. It's a little bit weird.
I didn't think that I liked Dalmatians until I saw photos of this little thing.
It's cute, right?
You can tell I'm not a dog person or an animal person.
Every time I see him, I put him up on my Insta story simply because I know people are going to message me and ask if it's my dog. And I'd like them to think that just for a little bit.
There are a few things that get you like prolific Instagram messages after you upload. One would be like probably a bikini photo on Instagram stories because the world sucks. And the second would be a dog photo.
Yeah, it's like massive Insta cred.
Yeah.
As soon as Ziggy's up on there, I feel really popular. Everyone's messaging me.
Even though it's not about you or your dog, but that's fine.
Ziggy makes me relevant.
Yeah, well.
What about you? How was your week?
My week was fine. I quite irresponsibly took my nose out of the celebrity news cycle and put it back into the political news cycle.
Oh, how dare you?
I know, right?
Who is the Prime Minister right now?
So unnecessary. Yeah, I know, Scott Morrison, which is a little gross. To be honest, I've been so distracted this week by that, and I felt so exhausted at the end of each workday, not because I was doing any reporting on it, but because I was scanning Twitter all day, every day. It got to the point where I was like, there's no point me going onto any homepages at the moment of The Age or the ABC, because nothing is uploading as fast as it needs to. So Twitter was where I was at for the majority of the week.
Oh, you're such a political expert.
Not even. I don't know what it is. I think it's the drama. I think that's what it is because I'm not getting that drama from anything but Survivor at the moment.
How did you feel about it all though? Because I felt really frustrated and really upset with the political stuff going on.
I felt very confused, genuinely very confused as to how a whole heap of really smart people can't gauge the electorate and how they can't actually get their heads out of their ass and realize that nobody actually wants this. That's what I was really confused about. It's like, you're meant to be smart. How can you not read the room a little better?
I think that might be a case of high IQ, low EQ. They just cannot read the room. They can't read what the mood is.
Which is crazy because it's not like this happens in other countries as much. I think Japan is the only one that it's happened as much in. So it's not like it's a common characteristic for politicians across the world to have their heads so far stuck up their own ass.
Just another Wednesday. Going to call a spill.
Right, yeah, I know, exactly. So that was my week, to be honest.
Can I just have one little point before we move on from the politics side of things? In my head, Malcolm Turnbull was the most desirable / popular thing about the Liberal Party. He was leading.
For you.
He was leading the preferred PM.
For a left-leaning greenie.
Give me a sec.
Of course, I agree.
He was leading the preferred PM poll over Bill Shorten by 19% when this all went down. He was by far.
Yeah, but they weren't the preferred party. So
who cares? They've got a shit party with a shit leader.
No. I don't think you understand. It's all stupid. None of this has ended in a way where it's been good.
Tony Abbott must feel so shocking right now, and I hope he does, because he's just the little mastermind, the little puppeteer.
The Batuta Advocate really shone this week. They did some brilliant, better reporting than most news outlets about.
Most weeks they do that.
There was one about Tony Abbott needing to be taken to a nursing home now. It's like too much rogue. Take him away. Anyway, first on the agenda, which is a little more serious, I think, than probably the political scandal.
Probably this entire podcast combined, yeah.
Yeah. So Asia Argento made the news again. Asia is obviously the girlfriend of the late Anthony Bourdain, who was the forefront of the Me Too movement when the Harvey Weinstein allegations came up. And so she gave a really powerful speech only a couple of months ago. Do you remember where that speech was?
It was at Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, I think so. And she again is talking about women in Hollywood and sexual assault and Me Too. And she did become the face of the movement. And suddenly she's become
victim and perpetrator all at once.
Of sexual assault herself. How did you feel as you saw this story unfolding?
Stunned. I think mostly stunned because I was surprised that someone with this kind of skeleton in their closet would put herself on that stage and open herself up to this kind of downfall. I was just really surprised that she would do that. We should talk about the boy who has accused her of sexual assault. His name is Jimmy Bennett. He's a child actor. He's now 22 and he's trying to make it as a musician, but he is saying that when he was 17, just turned 17, Asia sexually assaulted him when he was in a room in California with her.
Which is technically statutory rape because he was 17 and she was 30-something.
And he's not technically, he's not legally allowed to give consent or able to give consent.
No, not at all. And I think what's really interesting here is when we talk about statutory rape, I think there's a real sense that there are levels of seriousness regarding rape, and statutory rape is potentially, quote-unquote, less serious than the others. But I think what's really important in this case to note is that Jimmy Bennett and Asia Argento know each other because he played her son in a movie years ago when he was 6 or 7 years old.
Mm.
So she has known him when he's 6 or 7 years old and has always kind of been a mothery mentor figure. And suddenly, 10 years after that, they're in this mess. And I think for me, not that I've ever considered statutory rape less serious, but I think for those that may have unconscious bias towards it, that's a really important thing to think about.
Yeah, that this woman was having a relationship with him on some level since he was 6 or 7, and eventually that turned sexual. It does give an insight into, I'm not saying she groomed him, I don't know enough about the situation. It's obviously only coming out now. However, it does open itself up to some murky shit because she has known him for years. She's known him for over a decade. So I don't know. It sounds like a very, very unusual dynamic between the two of them. And she looked really, really badly when she originally came out and gave a statement that they had never had sex before. They'd never been in a sexual relationship. And hours after, her text messages were leaked where she said to a friend, "I had sex with him. It felt weird. I didn't know he was a minor until the shakedown letter. The public know nothing, only what the New York Times wrote. The horny kid jumped me." So she's saying to us, "I've never had sex with him." And hours later, it's revealed, actually, you've sent these text messages to your friend saying that you did.
That for me, I think, was probably the most troubling part, because for someone who's been at the forefront of the Me Too movement for so long, and I think what punctuated the Me Too movement is particularly the Hollywood one we're fixating on at the moment, is the idea that a lot of abusers gaslight their victims. So when victims do come forward, or survivors come forward, and the perpetrators like Harvey Weinstein just call them liars. "You're a liar. This never happened." And suddenly that is the one thing that makes any survivor feel crazy. And I think when we talk about Me Too, that's a huge part of the conversation in trying to make survivors feel empowered to want to come forward and tell their story.
Mm.
And she just did the opposite. She completely gaslighted him. She lied publicly about it. And there was a great piece in Vox this week. Did you read about it? It was from Anna North for Vox. And she wrote about why lying about it was one of the most damaging things that Asia Argento could have done in this case, because she said by casting doubt on his previous lawsuit, which is what Asia Argento did, she sort of brought in a previous lawsuit that Jimmy Bennett had lodged against his parents and painting him as a destitute and dangerous scammer without any acknowledgement of the way her words might affect others who come forward about sexual misconduct, Argento does a disservice to the movement she has championed. Notably, her statement lacks any discussion of this movement or of the lessons she has learned through her advocacy. It's as though she doesn't see Bennett as part of Me Too at all. Which is when you said at the start, it's weird that someone with skeletons in their closet would come forward and be so public about Me Too. It is kind of more telling that perhaps she doesn't see him in the same category as her.
Which is sad, because I don't think Me Too is just about women at all. It's about women and men. Not men can all. Be victims of sexual assault just as much as women can be. So, yeah, I can't even begin to explain how monumental this fuck up on her behalf is. I think the other side to this is that if she's saying, "Oh, I didn't know he was a minor," I'm sorry, that is your responsibility. You've known this kid since he was little. You would have known that it was at least a grey area. It is your responsibility to make sure you have consent and make sure the person you're sleeping with can give you consent and it's legal. And that is no excuse to say, "I don't know how old he is." That's just ridiculous. We need to be really clear that once you're in the bedroom, you are responsible for your actions, and it is your responsibility to say no and to find out the information necessary. He's clearly a teenager. That should have been a question that she should have asked immediately.
I agree. I just think for me, it's a huge turning point, not just for Hollywood, but for everybody, in that we need to all rethink our own biases now, and that Me Too might have started by empowering women, but it's actually not about women anymore. It's about everyone who might be finding themselves in a position like Jimmy Bennett and Asia Argento in both cases.
Yeah.
So I think that's the most important thing we can possibly take from this.
Yeah, and we really need to recalibrate that a 17-year-old boy doesn't necessarily want to have sex with a 37-year-old woman. There's so much grey there, and I think we really need to retrace our steps and go back about a kilometre and think, you know what, just because he's a 17-year-old boy, it doesn't mean he wanted this. It doesn't mean he even knew what he was consenting to. And we need to view women like Asia Argento as just as dangerous as male perpetrators.
Agreed.
And now it's time for the quick and dirty. You guys know the drill. Every week we bring you the top five celebrity news stories from the rough and tumble of the news cycle. Zara, it is your turn this week.
I am ready to go. My first story on my list is one of my favourites from the week. Married at First Sight's Sarah Rosa on freezing her eggs. That is from Who magazine. Did you see this story around?
I saw her Instagram post. I think someone put the Instagram post in our Facebook group, Shameless Celebrity Gossip, and there was a bit of back and forth about what a feminist moment it was. I have not seen anything since then.
So her Instagram post was very subtle and a bit vague, but it was basically a photo of embryos, maybe? And
yeah, like an embryo being injected.
And then she's like, so excited for the next phase of my life. So
doctors probably just heard what I said and cringed.
Yeah,
I knew. I'm sorry if that was wrong. It looked like an egg with a needle in it.
Yeah, something of the sort. And that gets you pregnant. That's not the traditional sense. We need to get out of this.
Not a penis.
This is how we need to get out of this whole fast. Anyway, all of the headlines picked up all of the A lot of tabloid news outlets picked up the story and said Sarah from Married at First Sight is pregnant. She didn't correct the record for until maybe a week later when she said, oh no, I'm actually not pregnant. I'm just freezing my eggs. By the way, here's the company that I'm freezing my eggs with. They're great.
Oh my God. Okay.
She duped us all, which I think is so funny. That's her own fault. Because our news cycle is so dependent on
Married at First Sight stars?
Exactly. And Instagram and little information. That's our own fault for not actually digging deeper.
My absolute pet hate is seeing an article, clicking into an article, and all the writer has done, and I've been guilty of this in the past. I'm sure years ago there would have been articles like this, that the journalist has clicked into an Instagram post and written 300 words on something that I could just go to my Instagram feed and get every skerrick of information that journalist got just by looking at an Instagram post.
Yeah, unless they actually asked her for comment and she was vague again. There's no excuse for the stupidity that just unfolded, because then we just gave her so much free publicity for that random company, egg company that she's getting paid for.
Egg company. So, is that the official term? Egg company.
Yeah, it actually is. I think it's called Egg Company 101. Number two, Ben Affleck to enter rehab after intervention by ex-wife Jennifer Garner from news.com.
She is kick-ass.
Oh, the photos from this, I think they're zoomed in pap photos of them in the car. There's a great one that someone also put in our Facebook group where she's in the car and he's in the back seat and she's just got this burger and she's not looking at him. She's kind of passing him the burger as if he's a four-year-old child in the back, and it's just like, eat your food and shut up, which is a brilliant photo. You liked that one.
Oh my God, I absolutely adored it. I think we did a whole segment on Jennifer Garner and how much we love her. It would have been early days of the podcast, first month or so of doing the podcast. She is epic. I think she is a feminist warrior. I love her. Everything she does, I feel the sudden urge to clap.
Got a very positive spin on this, but it's pretty shit that, I mean, mental illness and addiction is pretty sad. And it's kind of hard that even though they're not together, she's the one that's always pulled through and has to pull him out of his holes.
How much strength does that speak to, though?
Yeah.
But to be able to have your ex-husband who has cheated on you and dragged you.
And many girlfriends
And Playboy mansion models everything under the sun. And for her to still be there and be like, you know what? This is the father of my children and he can't get his shit together, but I'm going to help him no matter what. He's going through something really dark and he's been in rehab twice before, first in 2001, second in 2017, if my dates are correct. And he's battling alcoholism and she is just getting through it. She's one of those women where nothing. You know when you look at someone, you're like, how are you doing this? When you look at a woman, you're like, how can you be so strong for all this?
Yeah, she seems very together for something that would kind of make you unravel after a few times.
Yeah, well, he cheated on with the nanny. He was not a good husband to her, and yet she continually has his back and looks out for him.
Yes, well, that's number two. Number three, The Bachelor's Cass Wood responds to hurtful stage five clinger comments from Marie Claire.
I'll give a recap on this story before we say anything else. Basically, it was a very, very small quote. I don't think she can say too much about Channel 10. We really need to keep that in mind. When people are like, Cass Wood needs to share her story, or Cass Wood needs to come out and be honest and slam Channel 10 for what they're doing to her, she contractually cannot. In the past, when things have happened to Bachelor contestants, Zara and I ourselves have tried to reach out to these girls and get them to speak to us about what's going on the show and how they're being depicted. And they cannot contractually speak to anyone else until their time on the show is over. And even then, it's a few weeks after they leave.
I think it's even months. Mm. I think it depends on what they want to say. And I think if they actually want to go rogue, it's months and months until after the show's finished. And then nobody cares.
Yeah, by that time, it's died down. So her comments were basically saying it was hurtful to see this stuff around. And obviously every news publication, as we said last week, is running with the narrative that Cass Wood is a clinger and a crazy ex and a stalker. And she, in my mind, has partly played into that role like a dream, but a lot of this has been the producers always zooming in on her eyes and using the camera to dart back and forth between Cass to create this look that she is flappable and a bit crazy and in your face.
I sense that, I don't know, I'm quite harsh on The Bachelor this year. I'm pretty over it, I have to say. I don't think I've ever sensed that people are as over the editing process as they are this year. I think people are really disappointed and can see how transparent the editing is with Cass Wood. I think you can say, yeah, well, she has to play some part in it, but I'm just so over the show that I actually think all it is a young, innocent girl who really likes a guy who's been really played here.
I have found it interesting that on her Instagram posts that they're very sanitized of all hate, which I think is really good. I'm hoping that either someone from the network, I mean, I'm not going to give them too many props because they've put her partially in this position, but a friend or a loved one must be going through that feed and deleting any comments of hate because it's very sanitized and it's very positive in there, which I think is a really good move while she's going through all of this.
That is really smart.
To not have hate bombard her channels, I think is really clever. So whoever's looking at that is doing a really good job.
Number four, another Bachelor story, but this is quite a funny one. Bachelor front runner. And by the way, if you actually don't want Bachelor spoilers, because I'm pretty sure this is a pretty serious one, skip ahead about a minute.
Yeah, a minute and a half. We'll say the name at the very beginning. Skip forward a minute and you won't know who we're talking about.
Okay, Bachelor frontrunner is all but confirmed winner of reality show as it's revealed Nick Common's family are Facebook friends with her and his sister wishes her a happy birthday. Obviously from the Daily Mail because it was about four sentences long.
And obviously talking about Brit.
Yeah, now I'm not going to use her name.
Yes, we won't use her name from that point forward. They're the ones who grew up in the same town. That's all you need to know. That's all the identifying factors we're going to give. Done.
So Facebook friends.
Yes.
She is with his family. She also, there was hilarious screenshots from the Daily Mail as well when it was her birthday and Nick's sister posted on her wall saying happy birthday. It just seems a bit silly.
Can you imagine the Daily Mail newsroom when they found that? Some journalists would have been like, this is the pinnacle of my entire career at Daily Mail.
Someone must have sent it to them, like one of her Facebook friends or something. Leaked it because maybe her profile wasn't as private as it could have been before the show and they jumped on it.
The only other possibility is that she's actually friends with his family in some way, but I would highly doubt that the runner-up or someone who lost The Bachelor would be friends with The Bachelor's family on Facebook.
Just so absurd. Channel 10 cannot hold this together every single year. There's always a spoiler and it's always from the Daily Mail.
Oh, I know.
Next it's going to be pat photos of them together and it's ruined.
Would you be happy with her winning? I mean, I'm heavily invested in this year's batch. You're not so much.
I cannot get over how over it I am. I don't think that he's with her. I'm hearing terrible, terrible rumors about what he's been getting up to since the show from so many different people that it's kind of alarming.
Can't hold a man down.
No, apparently not.
He's
not
like the anti-monogamist from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so am I. So I'm just going to not put all my eggs in this basket, and I don't actually care if it's or not. That's what I think. Number five, so insanely idiotic, it borders on brilliant. Viewers praise trial by Kyle.
I didn't watch this show, I'm not going to lie. However, I did read a recap of it, which was pretty darn funny. No, I couldn't be bothered. I know that Skye Wheatley from Big Brother was on it.
Yeah, she was. So I was watching The Bachelor, and I think this must have come straight after The Bachelor. And I found myself sitting in front of it, and this is how much I definitely couldn't work in TV because my sense of what people want is clearly so skewed. Because I watched it and I see Skye Wheatley coming in, and I'm thinking, this show is a joke. Nobody is going to like this. This is the laughing stock of the whole pilot week, in fact, the whole year. I watch it for about 5 minutes before I shake my head, tut tut, and turn it off. Next thing I know, I wake up, ratings were brilliant. People loved it. Trash television at its best.
Yep.
I thought I knew trash television. Apparently, I don't. It was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Well, apparently that was the appeal of it. I just love that they spent so long trying to rectify Skye Wheatley's double bubble boob job.
Yeah, the bubble was pretty bad.
Was it? Yeah. And Anna Heinrich's on there. That's the thing that upsets me. Anna Heinrich is so classy and beautiful and articulate. And for her to be on Trial by Kyle is a bit of a...
It is an interesting move. Definitely interesting move. I think it speaks to how much Anna and Tim, to be honest, are desperate for TV careers because he has just moved into Neighbours. She must really just want to get into TV. And a funny move for someone who has made a pretty credible career as a criminal lawyer.
Mm, and a little aside to all this, they just got married, right? We covered their wedding a few episodes ago, but... they're living in separate cities so that they can pursue these TV careers.
Well, I think he's flying back and forth a lot.
On the weekends.
Yeah.
So but physically living in separate places. So Tim's living in Melbourne, obviously for Neighbours, and Anna's living in Sydney for Trial by Kyle. I just think it's really interesting that they're so dedicated to this career path that they're willing to live in separate cities for it when they're just newlyweds.
Also, just before we move on, because I agree with that, and good on them for that kind of drive. An interesting move for someone like Anna aligning herself with someone like Kyle Sanderlands, because I have only been thinking about how much he'd have to pay me to align myself with Kyle Sanderlands, and it would have to be a huge figure
I don't know. I think
it does a strange thing to her brand, and I don't think anybody can deny that.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
It does tarnish her brand in some way, and it depends on, again, your definition of tarnish, but it sort of makes it a little less highbrow, quote unquote.
Of course, but once you think of the fact that she's aligning herself with the biggest powerhouse in the radio industry in Australia, yes, he's trashy and yes, he's a shock jock, but it's not entirely stupid. She, by comparison, can come across as quite intelligent and quite
Potentially.
Switched on.
Oh, I have no doubt that she's thought this through a lot. My initial reaction was being tired of Bachelor contestants just coming out of the show and sitting on the fence and never saying anything about anything.
Mm.
Anyway,
do you feel okay?
Yeah, you're all right? I'm fine. That's me done. That is the quick and dirty.
Thank you, Zara McDonald.
Since this Men's Health cover, Audrey gives me shit about it because she busts me every night. I brush my teeth with my shirt off looking in the mirror, like that old Oral-B ad, but face on, right? Because every night I stand there and go, this is what my body looks like now. This is, okay, where there was love handles, there's now obliques. Where there was, you know, nothing, there's now muscle. Where there was, you know, your love handles are no longer the widest point on your body. Now your lats are. Just keep that in mind. So every night I have to reframe that. But, yeah, it's something I've dealt with my whole life.
You just heard Osha Gunsberg speaking on the No Filter podcast about his mission to get on the cover of Men's Health with the most ripped body possible. The Bachelor host's quest began after the Daily Mail published photos of his, and I quote, Bali belly, as he changed into a swimsuit in Indonesia in 2016. While Osha did interviews about his new abs all week, speculation hit the tabloids that Today Show host Karl Stefanovic has dyed his grey away and gotten hair plugs. Zara, do you think men in the public eye are now being judged for their appearance more than ever?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think that comes with how much time we're spending online, how much more of themselves people are putting out there on social media, how tabloid culture is in Australia probably stronger than ever, with the Daily Mail pumping out 630,000 articles a day.
They're still going on Tammy Hembrow, by the way.
Are they?
Yeah, every day.
Amazing. So I think, I think you're right. I think that there's a lot of factors at play, but I think that there are many instances where it's not just women who we are trying to catch out in uncompromising aesthetic situations, which
absolutely
is a strange
not.
Situation. I mean, say a strange sentence, sorry. But men too. I think that the paparazzi will go to a certain length to find really unflattering photos of anyone these days because people click on that.
Mm, the narrative about Karl Stefanovic has been really interesting. Obviously, he's preparing for his wedding, and I will read out the headline that the Daily Mail run with before I speak about it. New do for the big day. Today's Karl Stefanovic displays noticeably thicker and darker hair overnight ahead of his wedding to Jasmine Yarbrough. I find this scintillating that we're looking at the pre-wedding prep for a man so closely, and we're looking at his weight, and we're looking at whether his hair is getting thicker or thinner, and whether it's grayer or darker. And for Karl to be put under this type of scrutiny is really fascinating, considering that it was only probably, it would have been less than 10 years ago that he wore the same suit every day on Today Show, trying to see if tabloids would pick that up, as opposed to Lisa Wilkinson always getting harshly critiqued for what she was wearing every single day. And I think it's slowly starting to change. I mean, he probably, when he did that story and he wore the same suit every day for a year, he probably thought, eventually, women will just stop being judged for their bodies and their appearance. Now, men are just starting to catch up to women in how much they're being judged for everything aesthetic.
It reminds me of when Craig Hutchison was on The Footy Show back in the day. For those who aren't listening from Melbourne, Craig Hutchison is an AFL journalist. He was on the AFL Footy Show for about a year before he was sacked. And after he was sacked and he was replaced with Eddie Maguire, he said that there was probably a couple of reasons why he was sacked. But one of them, he said, I think there's a reasonable expectation that if you're going to host a television show, you're in good nick to do it and that you're visually appealing to the audience. The weird part about it is that I actually lost 16 kilos, but I'm still overweight. So I think he looked back in that sacking in hindsight in the weeks and months after and said, I don't think that visually I was as appealing as I could have been, and therefore that was one of many factors to my sacking. At the same time, as he was replaced by Eddie Maguire, the Herald Sun ran an article at exactly the same time saying it will be a slim and trim Maguire who makes a triumphant return as co-host of the AFL Footy Show. Now, firstly, imagine if these roles are reversed, if this is how we were talking about women. But secondly, this fixation on weight in the TV industry is probably not new. I know that aesthetics are always important, but we always look at, remember those age-old conversations we have about newsreaders and how a 70-year-old mildly overweight newsreader that's a male will last on TV forever, but the minute you're over the age of 35 and a size 10, you're out as a woman. But I think this did change the narrative a little bit. I am in a couple of minds about this now. Tell me how you feel or you felt about that in particular too.
Well, just another aside to that Eddie Maguire snippet that you gave us. At the same time, this was another headline that ran. I can't remember what this was in, but it was called Radical Diet Sees Eddie Maguire Lose 15 Kilos in 3 Weeks. So basically, he existed on a diet of herbal tea and half a cucumber a day. So I actually want to go out on a limb and say I don't think that the weight, the way we look at weight on television stars is gendered. I think we're just as much looking at men and how much weight they're putting on. Age is different. I think when women age, as you said before, it's considered differently, which is disgusting. And that's why Botox is so popular. But weight is very, very widespread. The discussion about men and men's health being correlated with the size of their waist.
Well, I don't think fat phobia is gendered. I think that if you are fat phobic, which I think the TV industry at large probably is, I don't think it's going to matter whether you're a man or a woman for those sort of biases to come into play. I have to say I've come a long way in my thoughts about this because I agree with you in a sense that we're picking up on what men look like and they're sort of being slowly dragged down to our level, which at face value is true. Nowhere near do they face the amount of scrutiny that women do, but they are slowly seeing more of it. I think what we need to note is the implications about that. And I know that sounds very vague, but I think men can be objectified and we can take photos of Osher Gunsberg with Bali belly and in Bali in an unflattering way. And that can be really damaging to him. That can be. And he said it was, and he took the perhaps to the press council and won. However, what happens to Osher Gunsberg after that is probably not as damaging as what would happen to a woman.
Why?
Because we let men play any character they want to play. If they're not hot, that's okay because there are other characters they can play.
You just spoke about a man losing his job because he felt like he was too fat for the job.
Of course. But there are so many more things at play. Craig Hutchison can still play another character in the public eye. We have fullbacks for men that don't fit the ideal man. We don't have fullbacks for women that don't have the that don't play the ideal woman. Do you see the difference?
No, give me an example.
Okay. I think a woman, if a woman is not hot, there's probably only one character we let them play in the public eye, and that's the overweight funny woman, the self-deprecating funny woman, as Hannah Gadsby talked about in Annette, that there's only so many characters a woman can play if she's not hot. There's only so much room we have for them. If a man is not really good looking, we still let him in the public eye. There is just a million more things he can do. It's not the be all and end all. For a woman, it's the end game. For a man, it's not. So as much as we're pulling them down to our level, the implications aren't as important. It's not like they're going to lose their jobs or not find work later, because subconsciously we will find them work. With women, there's only a couple of roles that they can play if they're not the ideal woman. Do you see that?
I'm not sure if I don't want to go into specifics about each woman and pull out women from the public eye, because I think that's really critical. No, I'm not sure I agree with you. I'm not sure I agree with you.
It's not laced with the same historical significance. Is that when we objectify a woman, there are so many other ideas that come into play about how we're never good enough, about how we are. And I know you can say that about men, but there is more than one ideal man. There is kind of only one ideal woman.
I agree with you that it's worse for women. I think you're overstating how significant it is. And I think if you went through every woman on Australian TV, they would not all look the same, number one. They would not all be underweight or average weight. I can already think off the top of my head of women who wouldn't be considered conventionally attractive, who are very, very successful in the Australian media
industry.
But
you have to be astronomically talented in order to make it into that industry. If you don't fit that idol, you absolutely do. Think of, it's really hard. It's actually really hard now to have this conversation without dropping names, because you're just going to sound like bitches. So we're really going to struggle to prove our points. But I think the amount of men in the public eye who are what we would consider conventionally average looking, a little bit overweight, but still with the kind of charisma that gets them through, is so many more. There are so many more of them than there are women of the same caliber.
I agree with you. I think you're being hyperbolic. I think there is a difference.
I'm not.
There is a difference,
I think you're being apologetic to men.
No, I think you're stating there's a difference, and there is a difference, but I think you are talking about the difference as if there's a chasm between the two.
I don't think there is.
I think I could name at least 10 women on Australian television who are some of the most successful women in Australian media, and they definitely do not fit the script of what makes an attractive woman.
I think you're underestimating the fight it takes to get there compared to a man of the same status. That's all I'm saying. I think you still look at the Daily Mail and you still look at the scrutiny that women are put under in relation to men, is that you'll find one story for every 50 story about women. So as much as I agree that this segment is about how men are suddenly being treated as women, I don't think the implications are as bad, and I don't think that there is as much.
All right, moving on just a little bit. I do want to talk I do want to talk briefly, I'm sweating after that, about Osher Gunsberg. He did get a bit of backlash for appearing on that Men's Health cover, because he has battled mental illness for many, many years, over a decade now. And he spoke about finally withdrawing from medication and really wanting to make sure that when he took himself off medication, that he was okay, and that he had something supplementing his lifestyle to make sure that he had balance and that he had a way of controlling his depression and his anxiety and everything that comes with that. And I was a little bit disappointed in the commentary around that, because he was on the cover of a magazine, he's not being a good supporter of men, and that appearing on the cover of a magazine ripped and glowing, that suddenly, like, he's betraying every man who doesn't look like that. And I just think that's a bit annoying to me. I think this body positivity culture is great, and I love body positivity, and I totally agree with everything that the body positivity message holds. But I think we sometimes take it too far, in that we look back on anyone who is proud of their body, which might be ripped and might be fit, and they might go to the gym all the time and love lifting weights. And we look at that and we go, you're not being an ally to your gender. I think that's really critical of one man who simply is happy in the skin that he's in. He is fitter than he's ever been. He says he's happier than he's ever been. And we're suddenly taking that from him and going, but you're not doing the right thing by your gender. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. As someone with mental illness, I suffer with anxiety. I would be the fittest that I am now because I exercise every single day to try and combat different symptoms of my anxiety and different ways that my anxiety manifests every single day. Exercise is such a huge management tool, and it's slightly annoying to see Osher's success in treating his mental health with exercise put down as, oh, well, now you're all about the aesthetics and that's not a good thing.
No, and I see how this, the optics of this are a little confusing for sure, because I think if it was a woman who had done the same thing, I wonder, I mean, I think it's actually different if it was a woman that had done the same thing, because when women pose on the cover of a magazine and have lost, what, all their baby weight, it actually is probably a little more damaging than if a man does just posing in his ripped body. I think that's a pretty fair statement. So I do agree with you, and I am sort of the pragmatic mindset that he argues that in doing this, he wanted to find a way to be able to talk about mental health and veganism, and he thought that this was the only avenue in which he was going to get a lot of airtime. And I kind of didn't mind that line of thought. I think it's a little too romantic of us to assume that you can get your really important message out just through traditional mediums. And sometimes you have to compromise on a couple of things in order to do something that you think is more important.
Mm.
I think it's just a little idealistic for us to assume that you can tick every single box at the one time. So I do agree with you. Absolutely.
I think it's also a little bit idealistic to think that Osher Gunsberg is proud of his body, but he shouldn't go on the cover of a magazine because that might make other guys who aren't as ripped feel bad. I don't know. I didn't understand the commentary around him being in the wrong by doing this, because I thought his cover was great. I thought the accompanying article was great. I actually bought it to check it out, and I thought it was really interesting. And
in bit of an Osher Gunsberg crush.
No, I found the cover interesting because I am so invested in mental health and exercise and diet. And I think there is such a strong, strong link there. The other thing that I'll bring into this conversation just quickly is I found it interesting that the Honey Badger, it's a good comparison to draw, that the Honey Badger, every woman's focused publication, ran with headlines in the past 2 weeks about the Honey Badger and his quest for love. Every male-dominated publication ran with headlines about how he got his ripped physique and what he eats and how much he trains every day. And I just think that's really curious that men are watching The Bachelor going, how does he look like that? Women are watching The Bachelor going, who does he pick?
Which is a good point to make. But one point I want to make again is it's not laced with the same insecurity for men looking at him and saying, why don't I look like that? That's all I'm going to say. So I agree, but I still don't think it's as damaging.
I want to talk to you guys in this video. It's been so long. If it was possible. It's hard.
That, dear listeners, is what the beauty community on YouTube sounded like this week after the fallings out of some of the industry's biggest stars mutated into a scandal about racism. Bear with us here because it's actually a very confusing one. In the last month, in a documentary about his rise to fame and wealth, beauty entrepreneur Jeffree Star, who has about 10 million subscribers on YouTube, gave an interview detailing his many feuds in the industry. In response, his ex-friends and colleagues, Laura Lee, Manny MUA, and Nikita Dragon, can't be a real name, surely, posed in a Twitter photo giving him the finger with the caption that suggested Star was bitter because without him, they're doing better.
Fellow beauty influencer Gabrielle Zamora, who posted the image in the first place but has never actually met Star himself, followed up with another tweet hinting at Star's racist history. Imagine standing a racist, he wrote. I could never. Then, well, Star's very loyal fans unleashed. Awful, years-old racist tweets from all parties involved were dug up and many apologies were made. The scandal has sparked many conversations about racism, about the beauty community, about tolerance and ignorance, and also how much should we be held accountable for what we did in the past? Zara, how did you feel as it all unfolded?
A little confused, first and foremost, because beauty YouTubers are not my bread and butter.
They are mine.
I had to learn who they all were. Although Jeffree Star was quite a familiar face, I must admit.
Mm-hmm.
I felt really intrigued by this story, especially because every single person in this story and in this narrative came out as so unlikable, it's not funny. Every single person. And it just showed so much how much power a loyal fan base can have in just unleashing a wrath on somebody else. And that is quite terrifying.
Mm.
But for me, more than ever, it just showed how ignorant we can be and how racism, even though some of these tweets, and I just don't even think it's worth us reading some of them out because they're just a bit gross. But even if they are years old tweets, we still have a long way to go in our attitudes to race, especially when it comes from people in such from such privilege.
Yeah. And what unfolded over the past week or so was as vicious as it was vacuous. There's no denying that some of these beauty influencers are the definition of narcissists. And I don't think many people can get to that place in the industry. I'm being a bit harsh here. I can see your face kind of...
I'm laughing because all I've thought for the last few weeks, and I've never wanted to say it on the podcast because it comes across too harsh, but just this exasperated sense of like, can we stop making stupid people famous?
Mm.
Because this was punctuated through the entire story for me. Keep going, because you called them narcissists, and I think that's worse than me calling them stupid.
Yeah, I think they are. I think the beauty industry on YouTube is filled with narcissists, and this has been an evolving discussion for over a decade now about the beauty industry and the racism that thrives within it. Some of the biggest names have been called out for their lack of representation and awareness of coloured people this year alone. So I'll give you an example. Earlier in the year, Tarte, which is a major makeup brand, I'm sure you've heard of them.
Yes.
Yes.
You have absolutely such little faith in me, okay, but I have heard of Tarte.
Okay.
With an E on the end.
Great. Tarte's Shape Tape concealer is massive, right? That's been like a beauty cult buy for years and years and years. And so Tarte went, right, we're going to bring out the foundation version of this. And the foundation had about 6 shades, all for very white, very European looking women. Nothing for Asian women, nothing for colored women, nothing. The shade range was absolutely ridiculous. So when beauty influencers came out and gave this foundation a good review, the entire fan base would slam them for not being more aware that this foundation only offers you a color. It doesn't offer any other type of woman a color, and you're not even woke enough, for lack of a better word, to actually recognize that this is excluding such a huge part of your own audience.
To look beyond your own experience is a pretty crazy thing that they couldn't do. It reminds me as well when Rihanna launched her
Fenty Beauty
line and how huge it was because it was so inclusive. It had shades for just about every single skin tone on the planet, and it was quite baffling to me how it was then that sort of big beauty brands woke up and they were like, shit, we have been losing business for so many years because we've been so exclusive in the foundation colors that we want to sell.
Probably because all the people making decisions are white. Exactly. Whereas Rihanna's come and made her makeup line from the perspective of a black woman. And she's thought, no one actually speaks to me as a consumer.
And it was only money that at the end of the day has woken up a lot of people, not public shaming, but money.
Yeah. And credit where credit's due, Kylie Cosmetics is actually very good as well at giving a big shade range and really thinking of colored women when they make products. But this, the reason we gave that context is because this has been brewing all year. It has definitely reached a climax now, but it has been brewing for a very long time. And what has happened was, I think we need to give a bit of context here as well about Jeffree Star. So he has Jeffree Star Cosmetics, which is a major cosmetic label. He makes millions and millions and millions of dollars probably a week from this label and from his lipsticks and his new eyeshadow palette and the like. He has a history of saying racist things. So back in the day, probably 10 years ago when he was a musician, there were videos that came out about him on MySpace where he was using the N-word in a derogatory sense to people on the street, where he was just speaking really poorly and he had this character that he used to portray, which was quite racist. So he's been getting a lot of backlash for years over his racist past, and he's had to do a lot to undo that and unravel that and educate himself as to why that's not okay. The interesting comparison here is that all these other beauty influencers distance themselves from Star as if they've never said a bad word, and how dare he come out and be so racist, and how can people still look at him in a good light when these things happened 10 years ago? So we're not going to repeat Laura Lee's terrible, disgusting tweets here, but it does raise a really interesting conversation about how much are you in 2018 responsible for the stuff that you said in your past and the stuff that is now archived on the internet forever.
I've been thinking about this a lot this week because I think, as well as a huge conversation about race that's come out of this, it has been a conversation about how much we actually should be held accountable for our past selves. I think public shaming in this sense, and public shaming, to be honest, is always very fierce. I have said for a long time that I've felt that anything anyone does in the public eye, when they trip over, the punishment very rarely fits the crime. The public shaming is so much more fierce than perhaps the mistake that was relative to the mistake that they made. So that has troubled me for a long time. The vicious in this case in particular, the viciousness of our response, and I say our quite, you know, inclusively, you know, for fans as well, does not to me mean we shouldn't hold people accountable for their actions. Unfortunately, that's just a byproduct of of their mistake. And I think we should actually hold every single person to account for anything that they've ever said. And I know that sounds a little harsh and maybe tough for a lot of people, because a lot of people change and evolve and we change our minds about things and our ideas about things change and we get more educated. But we're fully responsible for the people we are. I think we're fully responsible for the people we were, and we are fully responsible for the people that we intend to be. That's the short version. I think the long version is, while we should hold people to account, we should accept an apology from someone if it's quite genuine. Mm. So if you come out and you're exposed, Michelle, for something that you said years ago, I think we should absolutely hold you to account about that. I think the public should be talking about it. But if you come back and say, look, I'm an idiot, this is what I've learned since then, this is what my comments did, this is how they made them feel, and this is what I intend to do to change, I think that's where we need to stop and say, okay, good, you're done, let's move on.
And I think they did do that with Gabrielle Zamora. So he came out and gave a very heartfelt apology to Jeffree Star. Not only that, he actually educated his followers in his video. It was 40 minutes long and I watched the entire thing. And he spoke a lot about why the N-word doesn't belong to everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important and wonderful thing for him to do, because I actually see this whole situation in a really positive light. If you think about how many young people and the majority of the audience of these beauty influencers would be teenagers, how educated these people are going to be, these really young people coming through schools and universities now, who can look at all this happening and go, my idol is speaking to me about really important issues, and I now understand why I shouldn't use this word, or just because the N-word is in a song, why it doesn't belong to me to use it. And Gabrielle linked to a really important video, which we'll put in the show notes, which was by a scholar, I guess, explaining why the N-word doesn't belong to everyone and why every word doesn't belong to every person. And I think a good parallel is in the same way slut is not everyone's word, that sometimes that can be, the word slut can be used amicably amongst women and it can be used to empower women amongst women. It's a very different thing when a man then sees you on the street and calls you a slut. It's seen quite in a derogatory sense, of course. So in the same way, one word can mean one thing to a group of people, that doesn't make that word open season for everyone who wants to use it, because context is everything. And a white person using the N-word is filled with history and hundreds of years of denigration and marginalization and racism. And so for these beauty YouTubers to recognize that the N-word is not their word is good, and for them to be making videos about it that are getting millions of views is a good thing.
Yeah, good apologies. Like I said, if it's a good apology that, you know, acknowledges what was wrong and what needs to change, that is good. When you look at someone like Laura Lee's apology, that was dismal. That
I couldn't
actually
even get through it.
Fills me with rage. Laura Lee, for those who haven't watched it, I would recommend going to check this out, because this is how not to respond to a PR crisis. She released an apology video of herself. It was 5 minutes long. It was her bawling into the camera, and it was all about her. There was nothing about what she did and why it was wrong. There was nothing about how she's changed. All it was is, it hurts me so bad. I'm feeling so sad. This is so bad. This is how my family has been affected. This is how my last few weeks has been affected. It was all about her. Her tears looked fake, which is besides the point, but it just looked like an absolute circus.
And it exacerbated the situation for her so much. She has lost, at last count, since this all went down, I think it was 438,000 followers after this mess.
Which I think says a lot, because when I said before we should be holding everybody to account for them their past selves, like, that's just the brutal truth. In terms of Gabrielle Zamora, he was held to account, but he hasn't lost nearly as many followers.
He's gained followers.
As much as Laura Lee.
No,
and I think that says a lot in how we respond to these things, is how we move the conversation forward. Laura Lee's apology was the most white apology ever, because it clearly didn't understand what her words did. She didn't acknowledge who it hurt, how it might have hurt them, and all it did was focus inward.
Well, the whole thing was navel-gazing. She could not put herself in anyone else's shoes in that situation and realize how her tweet, which in my opinion was the worst tweet out of them all,
yeah, it was pretty bad,
was disgusting and disgraceful. Not only that, if you're going to own it, like Gabrielle Zamora said in his video, if you're going to be shady or if you're going to do something that's terrible, own it. Don't half own it. So for Laura Lee to come out in that video and say, I retweeted something that was racist, incorrect. She wrote that tweet. She didn't retweet anything. That's already saying, oh, I'm sorry, but it wasn't that bad. I only retweeted it, which was just a complete and utter lie and ruined her entire argument. I do want to pull in another example of racism in the beauty community here that people might not actually realize. So this excuse of being dumb and being ignorant is no longer enough of an excuse. So in December 2015, you might remember Zara, Australian beauty influencer Shani Grimmond, who we spoke about last week in our plastic surgery segment, vlogged with a Nazi flag in her background. Were you across this when it happened?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. So she was running around an apartment with her brother, and in one of her Snapchat videos in the background, there was a Nazi flag hanging from the ceiling, basically to the kitchen bench. This obviously sparked fury amongst her followers, and it led to massive brands on Instagram dropping her for the next year or so. And her excuse was, I didn't 100% know the meaning of this flag, which she said in her apology video, which isn't enough. It's not enough not to know what the Nazi flag means, and it's not enough to be that ignorant. And that event, it might be almost 3 years ago now, but that's probably something people still think about, that either she or her brother associate with people who have Nazi flags in their house. And I'm not going to pass judgment on Shani because she says she doesn't know the person and she was just in their apartment. But clearly there's some type of 7 degrees of separation there if you're in an apartment that has a Nazi supporter in it.
1 degree of separation. I wish this podcast could see my face because during that entire segment, my eyes were just bulging from
Did you have no idea about that story? No, I didn't know that. If that was an American influencer, that would have had a lot more fire to it, whereas because it happened in Australia, I feel like she was insulated a bit.
I mean, I know we talk about this all the time, and I know we run the risk of sounding like a broken record, but the lack of accountability, the absolute ignorance and arrogance from so many influencers who have been given a platform that is so insular actually blows my mind and infuriates me. I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I hear that story. I actually don't, because you cannot plead ignorance. You absolutely cannot. Or if you do, you have to accept that huge public fury and losing a lot of contracts is going to happen. Anyway, what I did want to pull into this as well, because I think for a lot of when we talk about racism, and I think the average person, particularly listening to this kind of podcast, would probably pretty confidently say, well, I'm a pretty open-minded, progressive person who accepts everybody for who they are and I don't care. I think the bottom line is, I think we have a lot of unconscious bias still lodged within us, which is society's fault, but it's our responsibility to recognize. And there was a great tweet that was actually not about this story from an Australian writer called Ruby Hamad, who does a lot of writing about feminism and about race and things like that. And she said something that I think is quite important for a lot of people to read. And she said, white people, please take this on board. You are not automatically a bad person if you absorb the messages society drums into you, but once you recognize it, you are duty bound to challenge it. So it's like you cannot, it's okay for us to say, well, I've accidentally taken on the wrong message my entire life. It's like when we were younger, and it horrifies me how pervasive the use of the word gay was in really terrible contexts. And none of us knew what we were doing. And it makes me really embarrassed about how that word was used now. But that's okay, as long as the minute we recognize that that's wrong, we actually are duty bound to change it and to talk to people about it, which is exactly what Gabrielle Zamora probably did. It's not what Laura Lee did, and I think that's why people are still angry about this story. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 25. Before we do go, we say this every week, but I think we say it because we mean it. We are a tiny little independent podcast. It's just Mish and I here doing everything, which we love doing, but if you do love Shameless, is that how we say it? Shameless.
Shameless,
and you want to help us grow, you can do a couple of things. We have been so enjoying how many of you have been sharing, listening on Instagram. It's good to know that real life humans are listening to this podcast and not just my mum.
The second you can do is click subscribe on Apple Podcasts. As soon as you click subscribe, it basically moves up the charts. So anyone who does that is a VIP in our eyes. We cannot tell you how much reviews and subscribes help us out. We so, so, so appreciate it. Apart from that, please tell a friend, invite them to the Facebook group. We'll be really transparent with you guys. There are media companies who will eventually have celebrity podcasts that compete with our own. And to compete or to even try and hold on to what we've got, we really need you guys to rally behind us, which you do every week. And we cannot tell you how much we appreciate it. You guys are the best listeners in the entire world. Not hyperbolic there at all.
Just a little bit, because you're the only listeners we have. But thank you so much again. We will see you next week. Like we said, find us on Facebook or Instagram, and we'll be there for episode 26.
Bye, guys.
Bye.